You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hello everybody, welcome to the Scottish Rugby Podcast brought to you by the Scottish Rugby Blog. I am Cammy Black. We are live currently on Facebook, Twitter, Twitch and YouTube. So you're very welcome if you're watching us live. We've got a few people joining us already. We've got Andy Lone. Hello Andy. And Jonah Lyon as well. Good evening to you both. I'm joined as always by John Anderson. Good evening, John.
Evening, folks.
You may also see at the bottom, I'm going to take him out of the stream because it's not fair for you all to watch him struggling away. Craig Manson is joining us this evening. He's got some sound issues, so Craig will be joining us at some point this evening to kind of give a... John can't have all the fun by talking to Ender, can you, John?
Oh, really? Oh, like, how quickly did I volunteer to come on this week?
After the Glasgow game,
after
the Glasgow game, it has to be said, John,
is
when you volunteered. So, yes. Hello, Craig. Good evening. Craig's joined us now.
Ciao, Bello. How are you doing?
I'm all right. I'm impressed, Craig. You've got your own roadie there. Me and John are going solo here.
Yeah, had a wee panic just at the last minute there with not being able to hear you. I could see you. And you can see me, but I couldn't hear you. So my apologies.
Which is absolutely fine for a video podcast. It's fine, but given that we go out as an audio podcast too, maybe we would have struggled a wee bit.
Yeah.
It's me and John just interpreting your various sign languages.
Let's see how much Glasgow chat we get tonight, and you'll see other sign language later on.
I was just about to say, can you quickly for the viewers at home, can you sum up Ember's performance in one sign language?
No comment whatsoever. I'm keeping my hands to myself. No, actually, maybe I shouldn't. Anyway, that's a different story.
If you are watching us this evening, you can also get this, as we mentioned, in audio format on all your podcast apps. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and wherever you can get your podcasts. We also have the blog, which is scottishrugbyblog.co.uk, where you can get Craig covers Embra. You've got John and Ian doing bits and bobs about Glasgow. We've got other people contributing, Chris Murray as well, with various bits as well. We also have, for some very special people, we've got our Patreon page, which is patreon.com/ScottishRugbyPodcast, and if you go there for the price of £3 a month, you'll get entrance to the Richie Vernon Thunderdome, where you get ad-free versions of the podcast, and you also get little mini versions of the podcast where we take out all the jokes about Craig interfering with himself, on camera and things like that, and you just get the rugby chat. Sometimes people don't have enough time to listen to the hour and a half, hour and 45 minutes that we ramble on for. So we try and do a little mini one about 40 minutes to an hour as well. You also get exclusive episodes as well. We try and do those once a month. So this month, probably next week or the week after, we'll be doing our hardest Scottish players of the 2000s. I think, John, possibly in July, I think maybe what we might do is try and choose Scotland's greatest ever Lion.
Ooh, that sounds fun. I mean, it's going to be a bit of a retro look, Let's be honest.
Yeah.
We're probably.
Like Alan Dell. That's Scotland's greatest line.
Best scrummage percentage.
100% scrums. Not many British Lions can say they've got 100% scrums against the head as well, was it not?
No mean feat. No.
So we'll do that as well. So that's for Patreons only. So if you go to patreon.com/Scottish Rugby Podcast, you can access to that. For £5 a month, you get access to the very, very exclusive Doogie Donnelly Members Lounge. And for that, you get our eternal gratitude. Plus, we'll also read your name out on the podcast as well. So we've got quite a few people in there, and we're very grateful to them. We are also sponsored by Manscaped. If you go to manscaped.com/Scottish Rugby or manscaped.com and use the promo code SRP, you can get 20% off plus free shipping on a wide range of male grooming products. We did have a complaint once from a lady who said, why are we not sponsored by a female grooming products? And, you know, we're open to it. Do you know?
I think if we've proven anything, Cammy, it is that we are game for these sort of things.
Yes.
We will probably, if there's a wee bit of money involved, we will be there.
Yeah, look,
opening of the letter, we'll be there.
I'm happy to, you know, if Veep want to sponsor this podcast, then I'm happy. But you know, who's to say? I mean, it's called Manscaped, but I'm pretty sure that lady, you know, it's a downstairs trimmer. I'm sure ladies can make use of that. I can't vouch for whether you can use the ball toner or the ball deodorant anywhere else. I wouldn't want to give that advice.
Your hands.
But as John said, they are very, very good for hands, especially people that you're on the bass guitar, John, aren't you?
No, I'm on drums.
Ian's on the bass,
Ian on bass, yeah.
So yeah, very good on the hands. Like I said, you can get they've got a wide range of products. So they've got the trimmer for downstairs, but it does work elsewhere as well for things you need to trim. Ball toner, ball deodorant, lovely. We wash bags as well, plus a nose hair trim, which I do use, which is very good. Obviously, the nose hair trimmer does not pinch. I will say that. So you can go. I'm at the age. I'm 39 now. I'm getting hearing in the ears and stuff. It's deeply upsetting.
There's a lot more to come, Cammy. There's a lot more to come. I'm 48, and it's just all downhill for there.
Do not tell me that, guys. I am already like hirsute, to say the least. So if there's more to come. I don't know. I think we're going to have to get some more sponsorship, Gavin.
Yeah, see if I can extend the Manscaped sponsorship just to say, look, we're not getting any younger, but the hairs keep coming.
Keep it coming, guys.
Maybe that's why we do so well. Maybe that's why they keep extending our sponsorship. It's because the age demographic of our listeners are men in their late 30s, early 40s who keep finding hairs in places they don't want hairs to be. That's the only explanation.
Well, if you remember rightly, when the sponsorship started, we were actually on the podcast that night joking about how hairy we all were, and then it popped up.
Yeah, and then they emailed us and said, would you be interested? So what we were discussing at the time was whether or not trimming improves athletic performance.
Yes, that's right. Whether shaving your legs was good for your good
obviously
for playing
rugby. For swimmers, yes. Athletes, I think, believe that it helps. I'm not entirely convinced that in rugby that's going to
shave your legs, get a wee bit of baby oil on there, you know, off you go.
What you do in your own time, John, is up to you.
If nothing else, you'll smell quite nice. So.
If there's any referees listening to him, we used to have Rory Campbell, but he's quite a successful referee these days and off on the international circuit, so I don't think he'd come down and deal with our nonsense again. But if there are any referees listening, can you tell us, are you able to slather yourself in baby oil before a match? I'm just, you know, catch the slippery guy. Catch the slippery 15, you know, he's there covered in baby oil. Away up the pitch. They had to deal with
that. At least they'll stop chafing, I suppose.
Yeah. Well, that's true. I don't know. I know they had to change the law on the sleeves after David Sowell, because there is a specific law now that says you're not allowed to tear your sleeve off.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
The Sowell law. But I don't know. If anybody knows, write in. Let us know. Or if you're watching live, comment. Tonight, then, we've got a couple of things to talk about. I mean, the main thing that was announced today, I suppose we should get out of the way, Because I feel like Craig John's going to have plenty of fun, you know, later on. So let's have some fun at John's expense. But Benetton Absolutely. Have won the North section of the Rainbow Cup.
Did I ever mention that I was half Italian?
Is that true, Craig? Or is...
No, it's not true. But you know, I've got to try and jump on some sort of bandwagon. You know? The Benetton bus is leaving, and I'm going to be on that.
Have you got a Benetton shirt, maybe?
I'm going to have to invest in something like that, you know. But no, I think that's I'm enjoying the apoplectic views and the nuclear messages on Twitter, which are quite fabulous to look at. From I'm sure I haven't seen any Munster yet, and I'm sure the Munster fans will be fairly vocal. I know that the Glasgow fans are very vocal on the subject.
So, I mean, for those of you that maybe don't know, essentially the Ospreys and Benetton game has been called off because there's a coronavirus outbreak in the Ospreys camp, and it's been recorded as a 0-0 draw, but because the fault is on the side of the Ospreys squad, the Benetton have been awarded 4 points, and as a result, nobody can catch them at the top of the table, regardless of any further results. So Glasgow, I think, Glasgow 19 points, John, I think, or 18? 18,
yeah, 19. It's 18, I think.
And then Munster were on 15, I think, so feasibly they could have tied at the top with Glasgow. Glasgow didn't have any more fixtures anyway. So Benetton essentially are going to go away and be utterly torn apart by Pools if that game goes ahead.
Have you watched any of the South African games? They are going to be utterly creamed. It's going to be like, you see the Exeter, Newcastle the other week? There was like 73. Yeah. It was like, the way I described it to someone was like, you know when you get drawn against a really, really good team in the cup and you're no such a good team? And you go there and you're like, we're just here for the bevy. But actually, you get utterly scudded during the game. The ref calls it after 60 minutes. That's what's going to happen.
Well, that may be your Glasgow perspective there coming in there. I would say that, you know, there is a chance because to be, how would I put it, to be as spawny as Benetton have been over the time, I think that they are on for all the way. They're going all the way.
And let's not forget, John, why are Glasgow in the position that they're in? Who could they not win against?
Come on, John.
So I am not as apoplectic as some regarding this, because we do only have ourselves to blame, given that Benetton, having lost 15 out of the 16 games in the regular season, promptly scudded Glasgow all ends up. It's a very strange turnaround form. But having watched Benetton the last couple of weeks, they are really, really scraping it. Like, it's skin of the teeth stuff. I really think we're going to see. It would work really nicely for their narrative as well, won't it? Be like, oh yay, look, the new boys are coming in and look how competitive they are straight away. They're winning the title of this made-up Rainbow Cup that's not actually a thing. But, you know, for the sponsorship thing, it clearly is. Or you go down the other cynical route of saying, well, we did announce it was in Italy and it would have been really inconvenient if we had to send an Irish team and South African team to Italy in COVID times, so it's kind of convenient, isn't it?
Is this really? Sorry, Cammy.
I was going to say the D4 mafia orchestrating it for an Irish team not to lose, but for an Italy win, an Italy team to win, and in order to make sure that the Irish teams are protected from the potential of getting coronavirus in Italy. Is that what the conspiracy theory we're going with?
I mean, it's one of many conspiracy theories that we could go with.
Either that, or there was an Italian corona, a new variant from Italy and Wales, and then you've also got someone going around saying, "Pour petrol on that fire in Ireland." So, you never know. It would be an Italian voice that said that. You know, there's another bit of it.
Or Razzie's had a word and said, do you know what, boys? All my Munster guys, if they weren't pouring petrol on a fire, we need them fit for the Lions. So, like, if you could just have another weekend off and not go on a jolly to Italy, where I'm sure there's plenty of barbecues in Italy, so I'd be quite afraid for them. So I think Razzie's had a word. Like,
it wasn't a barbecue, it was a fire pit. For people who don't know, three Munster players have been four Munster players, four South African Munster players, suffered burns at the weekend because from a fire pit. That was the unofficial statement. It then transpired it's because they threw petrol onto the fire pit. So, yes, don't.
I hope they're all right. That's the main thing.
They're all right, still. Apparently. Yes, but don't play with fire. Don't play with fire, kids.
And the brain cells were severely lacking in that one. That was not very clever.
Did I see someone suggest today that that's like a South African thing, that they throw petrol on fires to keep them going?
I have not seen that. I would not like to suggest that. But if any South African listeners can confirm whether you regularly throw petrol on fire, and have you got third degree burns or any other sort of injuries from your fire pit, please let us know.
It's not. I mean, it's not a great smell, anyway. It's not what you want from it.
But it's better. It's better than throwing a tin of links on it, though, isn't it?
I think that doesn't just apply to fire.
Well, I mean, normally you would say kill it with fire, but even links, no, you can't.
I was going to say unless you're a teenage boy, I don't think links links works on anything. So should we talk about Glasgow then? Should we talk about the Glasgow Leinster game? I don't know whether I'm prolonging your agony, Craig, or I'm helping out here. But both games to a certain extent, but the Pro 14 seems to have. Well, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's like being rebranded the Rainbow Cup. I should have my brass thing on. Look, I should have this. That's probably the last time we'll play that jingle, so enjoy it, because they're not calling it the Rainbow Cup anymore. I don't know whether this is a rebrand as the Rainbow Cup and it being something like wonderful and, you know, bright and beautiful that has made everything go upside down and back to front.
Yeah, or it being a made-up competition that most teams have decided to sack off after the first week of getting gubbed by somebody.
That wasn't a bad Leinster side, though, was it?
It wasn't, actually, no. I mean, when the side was announced... there was a lot of Glasgow fans when the side was announced were saying, oh, well, I mean, Leinster are coming to play then. You know, they had a lot of very, very talented players that you would be talking about as, you know, the guys that represented Ireland Six Nations. You'd, you know, very, very experienced campaigners there. You had guys who were, you know, people have talked about Glasgow having that emotional drive with having so many people leaving, but Leinster had players playing their last game for the club as well. So there was, it was a decent side they put out.
Yeah, I suppose Glasgow fronted up for once against the Leinster side as well, John. I mean, there was that infamous game, I think, you know, with Johnny Gray's ridiculous number of tackles.
Yeah, 147 tackles in a game or something. The clicker broke, I think. it was that many. Yeah, they did, and it was one of those games. And I think quite often you find when you're playing the Leinster, the Munsters of this world, things have to click into place. And I think Leinster weren't at their best, right? Mm. But I'm not going to be cynical Sally like I usually am, and say, oh, you know, Glasgow just not quite game plan and blah 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 blah. I was really, really pleased with what I seen. Particularly in defence, I thought guys like Nick Gregg, who we've slated on here a number of times. I know the Ian, who's not with us tonight, but Ian has a real... You mentioned Nick Gregg, and I've never seen Ian get so passionate about anything. He gets so annoyed at him. But I think he made 18 tackles in centre, 100% completion. So that, coupled with a couple of younger players coming into the team and really kind of making their mark, it gave Glasgow an opportunity against a team who weren't playing that well, and Leinster were making a lot of mistakes as well, which kind of gave Glasgow a platform to play. But yeah, it was just really, really interesting. And it's almost quite frustrating in some ways that the season's now ending, because we're like, oh, we just found some form. We basically just need to play Edinburgh a couple of times at the start of the season and just get our form.
I don't think that's true, though, Craig.
No, I think what they've done is they've had a fright with the game that they played in Italy, and they've had a fright with their defence, and their defence has they've obviously focused on their defence and worked on it, and I think that was a turning point for Glasgow against Leinster was their defence. Fair enough, I could sit here and argue about the Stein try, a forward pass from Heistens and things like that could have been this borderline that went the right way with the ref, but you can't take it from them. It was a fantastic defensive performance because Leinster did throw everything, including the kitchen sink at Glasgow, and you know that Leinster did that because they started to get up, they started to go and lose their discipline because of it. So it was whether you call a 15-12 game a phenomenal game, it's still a great performance and a good result for Glasgow.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the one kind of sour thing, I suppose, John, is the number of players that are leaving Glasgow, and I know they've got some in. I mean, Adam Hastings the last few games has been absolutely outstanding at fullback, and that's good for Scotland in a way because he has been required to play there at times, and it then plays in his favour as being the off the bench option ahead of others. But I know there's McLean's possibly is a good talent, but behind him there's maybe still not much depth at fullback for Glasgow.
No, I think that's fair, but we've got Josh Mackay coming in as well, who's a fullback. He can play fullback, and I believe Cole Forbes has played fullback as well. So they're starting to build a wee bit of depth in these positions. And I think the Hastings thing's really interesting because what Hastings been injured during the season and obviously away with Scotland and then or injured then away with Scotland meant that Brandon Thompson had his shockers and then Ross Thompson got his shot. And Ross Thompson is a bit of game time. You know, quite often with young tens, they come into a side and you can tell really quickly whether they're going to be all right or not. Ross Thompson came in, immediately started kicking the ball well, doing the basics really well. And he's added to that as the season's went on. He's now starting to look like a bit of a running threat. He's got a lovely flat pass on him. So he's starting to look like a potential Scottish option at 10, believe it or not, which might silence the Donkey Weir Brigade, hopefully.
You will never silence the Donkey Weir Brigade. Yeah.
But the only way that comes about is when you've got an established international player who's absent or leaving. So you're going to see guys like Hugh Jones are leaving, that we're getting a replacement for him, Mr. Tuipotoa, or whatever it's said. I'm waiting for the official confirmation of how that's said. But we're replacing players with younger players, and Glasgow's age demographic over the last few years has been, particularly in the backs, has been geriatric. And we're starting to bring that down. Guys like Ollie Smith, guys like Rufus McLean are just getting a wee bit of game time, and it can only be of benefit to Scotland because we were never going to be able to rely on a Tommy Seymour to continue, or even guys like Nick Gregg, who Gregg's staying, but we need options. So I think it's all change, but yeah, it's not a bad thing.
I suppose that there's two leaving names on those the leavers list that stuck out to me, and they're both on the wing, and one's at one end of the spectrum and the other's at the other. And Robbie Nairn is one who has absolute speed, and whenever I've seen him, looks a reasonable option. But for whatever reason, and it's hard to know, we're not privy to what happens behind closed doors, but it may be surprised that he's left, John. Did that surprise you, or did you?
No, it didn't. And so Robbie Nairn's been one that both myself and Ian have been on the Robbie Nairn hype train for about 2 years, saying he's got all the attributes. He's a big, big lump of a lad. He's fast, really strong. Seemed to have quite a sensible rugby brain on him as well. But injuries plus, and we've talked about this in the podcast before, it's professional sport. If you get given an opportunity, you need to take it. And these guys who are on the cusp of the squad get given two or three opportunities, and that's it. That's all they're getting, because there's other players. And if you're no good enough, you're no good enough. And you might go and do a job elsewhere, and that's great. And, you know, I really want somebody to pick up Robbie Nairn and say, right, come, you know, go to championship level, tear it up, maybe play top level of the Premiership or something. But he's not shown enough in a Glasgow Warriors shirt to stay. So, you know, you compare it to a guy like, again, Rufus McLean, who's in, he's done, this season he's done more than what Robbie Nairn's done in four seasons. So it's a no-brainer.
Yeah. The other end of the spectrum, Craig, and I'll ask you about this, because it's a former Edinburgh player, Lee Jones, you know, who's 30. And, you know, from my perspective, every time I've seen Lee Jones be given an opportunity, he's taken it. He's absolutely, you know, I've never seen him have a bad game. He's really solid in defence. He's, you know, brilliant in attack. He's done really well for the Sevens, but it feels like he's been ever since he came on the scene with Scotland, that was that France game. I mean, I think he made his debut for Scotland the same year that Stuart Hogg did. And they kind of came along. It's an exciting time for Scotland. And I know he was unlucky with injuries at times. I know that's been an issue for him, but he just, to me, seems to have been completely misused by a succession of coaches at international level and at club level. And I kind of feel really sorry for him, that, you know, that it's kind of ended this way for Lee Jones, because it feels like, like I said, I've never seen him have a bad game.
I have to agree with that. I've never, especially when he came back for Glasgow this season, or was it this season, or was it just the end of last season? Yeah, in the last season, he was particularly standout. I thought his defence, when Glasgow were maybe not defending as well as they could have, or as well as they are just now, he was standing out. He was rucking over the ball as well. He was always quite strong in the ruck. I think he just suffered from doing well, getting injured, and then somebody else got the chance and they took it with both hands. And I think, yes, I agree that I don't think he's been utilised well by both Edinburgh or Glasgow or even Scotland. But I don't think, if you look at it, I don't think that either Edinburgh, Glasgow or Scotland have suffered because he wasn't on the team sheet. You know, because I guess that's kind of, it's a difficult one. Because, you know, I'm gutted for him, because sitting at 92 appearances for Glasgow, he's an ideal opportunity to be a centurion for the club.
Yeah.
It's interesting as well to think about. So, again, he's 30. A lot of the guys that Glasgow have got moving on, maybe you wouldn't consider Lee Jones to be one of the big earners, but he's not going to be cheap. He's a Scottish international. He's a seven specialist who is probably looking for his last contract. So the negotiation there is not going to be as cheap as it could be. And I think there's an understanding with the budgets that both sides are, whilst we're bringing in players, it's players that are going to be cheaper than the players that are leaving. And in Glasgow case, that's definitely true, because Tommy Seymour, you know, British and Irish Lion, is not going to have been cheap. Nico, when he came back, probably was cheap, but signed an extension. So again, these players, Hugh Jones was on an absolute wad. So replacing these players with cheaper options is great for the budgets in the current climate as well. So maybe Jones, I'm just speculating, because I agree with you both. I think Hugh Jones, every time he plays, you know what you're getting from him. He's consistent, he's solid, he has enough pace about him to still be an option. But he's lost out to younger, more exciting talents, shall we say.
Yeah. The other announcement this week for retirement, and this surprised some people. I mean, I knew he was down at Newcastle, but John Hardy's announced his retirement from rugby as well. Yeah. Just kind of said that the body can't take it anymore, which is, you know, given he's playing in such an attritional position, it's now maybe not surprising. But he's another one. I know, obviously, you know, we all know what happened, or allegedly happened, at Edinburgh. And, you know, I wasn't the reason he left Edinburgh in the end, but it must have played into it, Craig. But again, he's another one who you think, you know, he was a guy that, you know, he came along and I think changed the way Scotland played, in the particular with the back row, because we before that we were still persistent. I think Vern Carter come along at least acknowledged that we needed to play with one open side rather than two blind sides. Yeah. But then for him to come along and be like, well, we can play with two open sides here and do it successfully. You know, they had the John Hardy, the Hardy Cowan and Denton short-lived partnership that nearly got us to a semi-final of a World Cup, you know, and it's another one that feels, and again, I don't think this is necessarily down to the fault of any coaches or the SIU. I think it's probably all just circumstance. It feels like it's another kind of waste of a talent in a way.
It's difficult because obviously what happened or what allegedly happened is down to him. And that's the, you know, I think John Hardy. Well, the big thing for me is that Hamish Watson, Jamie Ritchie, all have someone to thank because they were coming through the ranks in Edinburgh when John Hardy was at his ball hunting prime, I can imagine no wonder he's sore because the amount of times when it was the Wild West at that point in time in the Rucks, but. They were hard chargers. Blair Cowan was a hard charger and good over the ball. John Hardy was the brought the Crusaders, not the Crusaders, the Highlanders way up to hunt the ball and keep it alive. And I think that Jamie Ritchie especially was part of the youth team at that time and coming through in Edinburgh. And there's no way that he had nothing to do with Jamie Ritchie. I'm sure they all worked together and Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson have both come forward, and I think it's changed Scottish rugby. I might be being over dramatic here, but you know, everyone's looking for a good ball hunter now in Scotland, and we're known for that.
Yeah, and I think that's fair. I think that's probably a fair assessment, John. That we were kind of toying around with the idea of open sides. I certainly see the. You know, on John Hardy's Instagram, Jamie Ritchie and Hamish Watson absolutely full of praise for. I know Watson's given interviews in the past about the, you know, and even John Hardy has said, you know, Watson and Ritchie just ask him questions all the time. How are you doing that? What are you doing? How are you doing it? So I think even if, as much as his Scotland career maybe ended in the way that nobody would have liked, his influence continues.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I think the thing he's not given credit for was when he came on the scene. Obviously, there was a bit of controversy with him being parachuted into the Scotland squad. But he was a very intelligent rugby player. He'd done all the hard work and he'd done all the physical stuff, but he was also a very clever rugby player. And you saw the step up in that 2015 World Cup, the step up in our play in the back row when John Hardy was involved. He was significantly better than anybody we had in position at that point. Now, yes, age of that position does catch up with you, and Hamish Watson and Jamie Ritchie and these guys quickly went past him, and injuries didn't help that. Head knocks, he had so many concussions.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. But he, because of how he left, he's kind of not given the credit he deserved. I agree with you guys. I think he did change the way he played. I also think he brought a degree of intelligence to our back row play that was lacking at that point.
Yeah. Craig, we've prolonged the agony long enough. Should we talk about Ed Ralston now?
Yeah. They finally start to play.
I know.
So frustrating.
I know. And I mean, Kinghorn at 10? Is that the new hog at 10?
Yeah, well, he did play at 10 when he was at Merkey, if I'm right.
Yeah, and I think he said it. I think he played at 10. Did he not play against 10 for Scotland against the USA in that game that we lost?
Sure he did, yeah.
I've wiped that from my memory, but yeah, probably.
There's something pointing in that direction. No, there were times he looked panicked, and there were times he looked. You know, but then again, if he's, you know, he's not played there for a long time, and he's or infrequently, you're going to, especially when you've got a fairly decent Ulster defence. But on the other side of things, the ball was being played. I think Jimmy Johnson was back to his old self of getting balls, short balls, and trying to break through defences, which he did eventually for the Kinghorn try. Doohan is, you know, got, you know, we got the ball finally into Doohan's hands, and he got his last try for his last appearance. So, you know, there was some good play. Sow, as usual, just looked fantastic in attack and in defence. It's, you know, again, with the amount of tries that were scored, we have to be pleased with the amount of tries that were scored and the amount of attacking opportunities we had. I think it was just unfortunate with the yellow cards. And don't get me started on Mr. Whitehouse.
Well, the Hamish Watson yellow card I thought was particularly harsh.
Well, you see, I was the other way around. I thought Nell's yellow card was incredibly harsh because I didn't think he actually brought it down. I thought it was an Ulster player that brought it down. If you watch back I was watching the game and you actually see an Ulster player on the ground, and Nell trips over him and comes down. And I think that's what they've picked up. Well, I can only think that's what they've picked up on. Hamish Watson, yeah, he was just trying to deal with, again, Blair Kinghorn's throwaway offload that didn't know where that was going. But so he was just trying to rescue the situation, and it was just unfortunate. Just unfortunate.
Yeah. The young Kuka, I quite like the look of him. I can't remember his name. I had the name, but my tab has disappeared. But I can't.
Patrick Harrison.
I thought he looked really good. There was a point where, Ulster were through, and he absolutely chased the player down and made two tackles in quick succession. And I felt really sorry for him, because in that time that he made those two tackles, that was enough time for the defence to reset, but it didn't.
Even when I think he got the ball and was marauding up the pitch as well. He's got a ton of pace as well. So, let's just hope that Glasgow don't come knocking and trying to take him away from us as well, like they did with George Thurman.
Don't do that.
But George, I'm only joking. We got rid of George
Thurman. Cockle didn't like him.
But he has that look of Josh Turner. You know, he's got that he's looking for the ball, and he wants to. He doesn't want to just throw the ball in scrimmage. He wants to actually, he wants to run with the ball, and he looks quick. And for me, he was my piece on the blog. He was my player of the match. For an 18-year-old to show the maturity that he showed, and the playing ability that he showed, that fantastic.
Yeah, and I mean, you just hope that he's given his chance, because there's his opposite number on the day is the young Ulster prop that's coming, the hooker that's coming across to Ember next season. So there's quite a queue of hookers now at Ember, and I don't know, my heart kind of sank watching him put in that performance and thinking, oh God, here's another promising Ember hooker that's going to be stuck at the back of the queue for 3 years.
I think there is a gap over our way, so.
No, it's okay. We'll hang on to this one. I think he's at the start of his career, and yes, Xander was playing when he was 19, 20 in the Glasgow team. So there is that opportunity. I think he's done a very, very good job. He's grabbed his opportunity. I think what we'll do with what will happen with what's his name? Is it Burnley or McBurnley or the Ulster hooker that's coming? He'll steady the ship with Dave Cherry, and we've also got Rambo and things like that. They'll be there, but once they're away doing their Scotland trips and there's this, that, and the other, he'll get the opportunity. And I really hope he stays, and I really hope he gets the opportunity, because he looks great.
Yeah. John, I mean, I'm going to make you praise Ember here. I mean, because that was a hell of a comeback. I maybe haven't seen that from Ember in the past.
Yeah, they dug in, and you could maybe make the argument that the first 10-15 minutes of the game, Edinburgh absolutely and utterly destroyed Ulster, and you were kind of looking at it going, I was surprised Ulster came back in a way, because I was thinking, well, they've got out to play for. It's they're bottom of the Rainbow Cup, whatever. And they came back, and I think a lot of that was to do with Edinburgh's inaccuracy. They invited them back into the game. As you say, discipline, a huge issue. I would agree. I think the Watson one was an interesting one, but the other one, it's that situation where you never want to be in that position, and you just know that something, if you put yourself in that position, which Edinburgh did, you just know that something's going to happen. You're going to lose a man. And whether it was Nell, you know, bringing it down or not, the ref's looking for a reason at that point.
The ref was on Nell all day, though. That whole game. Yeah. And I was not impressed with his scrummage refereeing at all. Because the Ulster loosehead could, you know, he had his hands on the ground, he had his knees on the ground, he wouldn't bind. Now, okay, fair enough. Nell's probably trying to not let him bind onto him, but he wasn't bound onto him on a regular basis. And they kept getting the penalties. It was
It's frustrating, isn't it? But no, I think there was a lot of fight, and it was interesting to see. Again, it was some of the younger guys, for me, were really setting the standard for Edinburgh and really driving them forward. Which, you know, again, it's that thing of you're seeing it at both pro clubs at the moment, that maybe it is those younger lads that are kind of pushing things forward. But let's touch on Mr. Whitehouse for a second. I think he had a poor game, but he did absolutely give yous a get out of jail free with that mitigation. Let's mitigating down. He's the first referee who's, I think he was right to do it, but he's the first referee who's went down the route of, do you know what? Actually, the framework says that if you hit someone in the head, it's got to be red, but I can mitigate it down for dropping height, but actually it's yellow or penalty usually, but I'm just going to ignore it all because I'm Ben Whitehouse.
I
think it's a yellow. I think he, in the, now don't get me wrong, for me, I totally agree. I would far prefer the referees to have the ability to do do what he did. But couldn't the current framework at this moment in time, if that's Wayne Barnes, that's a yellow.
Yeah.
He's not going to turn around and say, no, you know, just play on. It's a yellow card. And unfortunately, what I'm looking for and what we all look for is consistency. Absolutely. That's all it is.
Yeah,
absolutely. And if we're trying to stop head knocks and we're trying to stop all of this, we're going to have to swallow it sometimes and say, well, at this moment in time, it's a head knock. It's a clear shoulder at the head. Now, fair enough, the guy's tackling properly, but
I suppose the argument then is, isn't it? I suppose that, well, should he be attempting the tackle at all in that situation?
It's such fine margins,
but then that's maybe the behaviour that they're looking for. That if you have attempted a tackle on somebody that's already been tackled, in essence, just because he's a small guy that's slipping down, even if you're already in a position to tackle, then there was at least a second worth of decision to make to go, well, my teammate has already tackled him or is in the process of tackling him. I need to back off here rather than going in for a double tackle or going instantly in for the jackal. I wonder whether that's the way that they're trying to go, like you said, Craig, by being so rigid in enforcing the discipline, is actually trying to discourage the double tackle. So unless you're going to squeeze, you know, be able to kind of properly do the choke hold up tackle, is stopping the double tackle when someone's already on the way down.
Which, in the spirit of unintended consequences, which often these law changes have, you remove the double tackle from the game by doing that. What you then have? You have 14 men lined up across the park going, I'll just hit the next guy, and I'll hit the next guy. Defences, the game is, we're already talking so much about how much defence is on top. If you get to a point where you just encourage one-up tackling and you try and prevent those double tackles, you're either going to have defences just spread right across the park, not complete the breakdown, and just wait until an opposition make a mistake or kick it away, or you're going to have absolute carnage at ruck time because you're going to have so many more players available that they're just going to pump 3, 4, 5 bodies in missile format, and then we're going to see people with bad injuries from that. So it's, I mean, I get what they're trying to do, and I think it's absolutely right, but I think a degree of sense needed to be applied there. And I think yellow was probably reasonable, but it has to be done in a sympathetic way, sympathetic to the players. But on a separate point, I mean, Wayne Barnes, that was yellow, but as you said, consistency. any other Pro 14 ref, I think they would have given red.
Yeah. I think it's paraphrasing Jeff Goldblum in Jurassic Park here, but life finds a way. You know, defences and attacks find a way, and that's the joy of rugby, right? That you know, the laws, there's no other sport I can think of where the laws change so constantly to provide, to deal with it, one, to deal with issues, but also to provide new challenges.
Yep.
To, for one, it's safety, but I also think it's constantly providing new challenges to attack and defence coaches every time they change the laws. And there's no other sport like it for that. And that's partly why I enjoy the sport. So as much as I agree, John, that it might result in that, but then it might result in, so it'll have a knock-on effect and result in something from it. And attack coaches will then find a way to get around that. And then defence coaches will then have to deal with that. And then
I do think there's something, though, in the way the laws are set out just now. And I know people have talked about this online as well, but it is encouraging people to dip into the tackle because, you know, so the ball carrier, it's really encouraging them to go as low as they can.
Mm.
Because then it's making it almost impossible for the person tackling to, yes, there might be a drop, but if people are still penalising a drop in height, but it's contact with the head, a drop in height, that brings it down to yellow, you're still getting 10 minutes out of it.
Mm.
So it's really difficult. And the one thing we all know about rugby players is, yes, defences will find a way, but they all bloody cheat like nobody's business.
Which again is, that's part of the fun of rugby.
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, absolutely. But if there's a loophole to be found, and we're not talking Pat Lamb Bristol Bears loopholes here, but if there is a loophole to be found, rugby players will find it and will utilise it to death. So, yeah. But let's come on to the main point here. Edinburgh absolutely kicked it once again against Ulster in the last minute. You've done all the hard work and then you absolutely panted it.
I'm not going to accept that whatsoever. Just because you can stop talking about going to Italy, John. Now it's you know, at least we only lost by 3 points. You know what I mean? For me, we held them at we virtually held them at 13 when we had 13 men. It was just McCloskey just broke through, and it was a nice try. So you can't disagree with the result as such, especially with the stroke of luck that we got from the helping hand we got from Mr. Whitehouse. But I think I'm incredibly encouraged with, especially with the young guys that came on. I honestly think that Edinburgh will take pre-season and we'll see. I think it's going to be I think both Glasgow and Edinburgh are in good shape for next season. Because I know they've got a lot of, Glasgow have got a lot of players going. We've had a small amount of players going, but they've been quite, but they're having to reduce squads anyway because they did bring in quite big, they have built their squads up to quite big with all the different competitions that have been on.
I suppose the difference is, isn't it, that Danny Wilson's having to do a complete rebuild and root and branch, kind of, sorting the wheat from the chaff, and Richard Cockerell's been there and done that, and probably been there and done that in a more, when budgets were more healthier at the pro clubs, but he's now being, so that might explain, there hasn't been the same volume of leavers at Edinburgh as there has been in Glasgow, because Richard Cockerell's already got a good idea of who he wants and where his strengths and weaknesses lie. But I mean, he's still been forced to use young players, I think, Craig, and that's been the interest. I mean, you've got Marshall Sykes has had a run of games after being in and around the Edinburgh squad for a number of years, and Ben Muncaster thought was good at,
I thought Ben Muncaster was great. Yeah, you're absolutely right, Cammy. He did a great job. Even Hutchison took a good try. He plucked a ball out the air that Purgos had put about six yards above his head, he a nice step in through the tackle and got a took a nice try. So I was negative the last time I was on. I'm being positive this time.
And even at scrum half, I think, I think Henry Purgos, I think, is probably, he's come at the end of his career, probably, I think, as the scrum half. Edinburgh have got Ben Velikot coming in next season. I know he's He's not going to ride in like some white knight and solve all of Scotland and, you know, Emperor's.
That's when Finlay Christie will come over and he'll be the white
knight. The ginger knight.
Finlay Christie will come over riding Ben Bellicott into Scotland, and then it'll be, yeah, it'll just be a beautiful scrum half mishmash.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So, but I thought Charlie Sheen looks, I thought there's something more about him. He's almost been quite angry when he's played. I don't know. He looks very passionate, is probably the word I'm looking for, but that's not a bad thing. He looks like he cares, and it's nice. And I think that's maybe what Embra have. I think Cockrell's he's getting to a point where he has a squad of players that care, and it's maybe taken a few seasons to get to that point.
It's nice for Charlie Sheil to be involved against a strong team, up against a strong team like Ulster from the start, and he was allowed to play his own game rather than Oak try to overplay to get us out the mire that, although we were in the mire with 13 men, etc. But I think I didn't notice Henry Purgos coming on, but Charlie Sheil, when he started, you knew he was on. Look at the start that we had in the first two tries. So we just need to play him more, and we need to. He's like George Horn; he's just needing more game time.
Yeah, Henry Purgos, I thought when he did come on, looked like a pervy English lecturer from a university. They're the slick back hair, you know, those kind of.
And the dodgy tash.
And the dodgy tash. Just the guy that kind of pervs on all the young students that come in first year. That's what he looked like.
Is that Sander Slander?
We should be
very clear. We are not insinuating in any way, shape, or form that Henry Burgos pervs on school kids.
I'm not going to insinuate in any form that he's an English lecturer. That's it. Henry Burgos is an English lecturer. That's this week's.
Sander Slander.
And the creepy Sander Slander kind of fits into it, doesn't it? Would you like to Sander Slander?
I think the point I was making, I was going for a wee bit of a rile from you, but the point I was making was Edinburgh. Yet again, with the players you've got on the park at that point, you should be able to. You've got yourself back into the game. And how many times have we seen it from them now that you have got yourselves in a position to be back in a game that maybe you didn't deserve to be back in, and then you throw away with a penalty in the last minute, or you know, the clock's in red.
But how many times have Scotland been there and they've dealt with it? It's a problem that Scotland have solved, and it just takes. I think it probably just takes time. And I will just quickly say this deserves a mention. Is Fluid Highway on Twitch, Henry Perv Goss. Oh.
Bravo,
wonderful fun. But
if me and Ian done this, we would get into hell of trouble for this.
But I think that's. I think it's fixable though, Craig. Right? That you know, not being able to see at the end of matches, that's fixable.
Oh yeah, very much so. I think we had that up until you know with the just in the Solomon era. We used to absolutely. In fact, we had the point if you remember up against Ulster 3-4 years ago. I think maybe Cockerell had just started with the team, but Dunkey Weir got us out.
Yeah,
the Meyer, and we did the same. We did the opposite. You know, we did the same thing that they did to us. That Madigan did, you know, Dunkey Weir got the kick in and took the game. So away from home. So I think it's fixable. I'm just pleased to see them throwing the ball around a little bit more. The wingers the wingers in the centres getting the ball and distributing it a little bit more. And obviously, the greatest Schumann getting a try is always worthwhile seeing. So you know, keeps the prop love coming on there.
Ironically, I thought he was going to try and dot it down at the bottom of the post after his antics where he was
lifting the post up to put the ball underneath. There we go.
He done a George Turner, which was good to see.
Well, that's did you come about three or four times, or did it not?
I did, really.
It's an interesting tactic that Emmer and Glasgow both deploy, and I'm really interested to see whether or not it kind of makes the transition to international rugby, because... It's kind of been the accepted wisdom for so many years now that you get a penalty and you kick to the corner or you take the 3 points. this idea that you tap and, you know, the tap and go, apart from, you know, scrum halves with, you know, who've got an inflated idea of their ability, that's the only time you ever see somebody have a good tap and go these days. But to see the forwards, you know, having that, because it should make sense, right? Because you've given your opposition a time to reset their defence and get organised, and yet Glasgow and now Edinburgh have scored tries off it. So the forwards coaches have worked out that somehow that this works, and I'm just interested to see whether or not it's something that can only exist at the pro club level because you know, of the standard of players, or whether it is something that we'll start to see in the national games.
Luke Cowan-Dickie has been doing it quite effectively down at Exeter for the last season and a half. And no wonder with the forward pack that he's got backing him up and they're pre-latching and all these different things that they're doing. So I think that it's drifted back into the game because you're also the defensive read on a line out is becoming a lot more, you know, people aren't being surprised anymore at lineouts and things like that, unless you're doing a crazy, you know, bringing Was it Tommy Seymour?
Alex Dunbar.
That was who I was thinking. Yeah, absolutely. Unless you're a mish through the middle, sort of thing. Those are the surprising things. But they're it's either going to the front or it's going to the back, and so people are reading it now a lot easier. So, taking a quick tap penalty is actually quite a good thing now, because you're pretty much guaranteed to recycle the ball if you play it right, just as long as you don't go off your feet, you know.
Yeah. Good. I think that's we can probably do a season review in the next couple of weeks between now and the Lions tour starting. The other bit of news this week is the competitive league rugby for the club game is set to resume in September, which is good news for everybody. Everybody's back in training. We've all seen the videos online of everybody getting weights, training, and doing other bits and bobs. So there was 63% of the 252 respondents wanted to return to the National League structure with promotion and relegation. I thought that was interesting that everyone just wants to go back to normal, essentially. I think they're waiting now on kind of final words from clubs about where they stand following COVID and whether or not they still want to play at the level that they were at, or whether they want to drop down to the regional leagues. So that'll be interesting to see how that all plays out, because I think when there was the furore last time, Craig, you know, there was a couple of clubs that said, actually, we probably would quite happy to be relegated, and a couple of clubs saying, well, actually, we were ready to be promoted. And you know, there was all this controversy about how the voting had taken place, but it seems like everybody, although it's only 63% have voted for it, there doesn't seem to be any backlash in this. Nobody seems to be surprised or upset that they were being consulted rather than taking a decision, or the other way around, you know.
Yeah, from what I can glean from the players that I know, both in the men and the women's game, they just want to get back to normal. They're just striving to get back to normal. And I think they feel that, depending on what team you are, for the position you are in the league or where you left the league, you want to still go back to that.
Mm.
And I think that's the most for them. It's like, well, I've been playing there. I don't want to go. I don't want to drop into a regional league if I wasn't before. We feel we're better than that almost. It'll be a suck it and see, because you can imagine I'm sure there's going to be a few teams that have lost a hell of a lot of bodies, because they've scattered during COVID times and during lockdown. They haven't been able to train. They've found other teams to go to train with, etc., that are maybe more local because they travel to their club to play. So it'll be an interesting suck it and see to see how we go. I know that very much the women's squad I was involved with coaching, they are very much, we are staying where we are. We want to stay where we are. We don't want to go back to regional. We want to be in the National League. I think the clubs hopefully have listened to their players.
It's interesting that we've now got you on here, Craig, because of course when the leagues return, Berwick and Howe will be in the same league.
Yes, yeah, absolutely, and we'll hopefully we'll show you a clean pair of heels the next time rather than the last time we met. I'll say no more.
So for those people that get upset about the amount of time that I mentioned Beric on this podcast, which is any time I get the opportunity, to be honest, you're now going to have to put up with Craig talking about how a fife and John. Of course, you and Ian have picked up the boots again.
We have, yes, we're down at Bishopton. I'm currently nursing a wee hamstring injury, which I promised the coach I was going to do a 2-hour podcast special on.
Does that come and go, the hamstring injury, John?
No, it was a proper hammy injury. It wasn't just a, oh no, we're doing fitness work. Oh, tight hamstring. Oh no. No, it was a proper sniper in the crowd moment, which was a bit of a shame for me. My body wasn't quite ready for that burst of pace that I didn't know I had.
You see, I always tend to, it wasn't injuries for me. I tended to just drift slowly out onto the wing.
Oh, I've heard a lot about the prop winger fraternity. This is apparently a thing that props do, where you kind of just gradually, and then you pop up on the end of like a beautiful backs move. And then it's like, all right, okay, brilliant. We've got a prop finishing on the wing.
Well, we have got a turn of pace, these things happen, you know.
Yeah.
So I like how Cammy dismissed that really quickly.
I don't know where I can go with that.
Yes, Ian's picked up his boots for the first time. He attended his first proper rugby training. It hasn't been seen since, but he did attend.
Yeah. He's called off tonight as well. So,
crap call off, needs to get a return.
All right. And that is, well, I should mention that actually. Now training's back. One of my favourite ever sections that we've ever done on this podcast is crap call offs. And what we want you to do, if you go to the club and people are calling off training, or they're calling off games and the reason is utter rubbish, let us know, because we have had some absolute crackers down the years. I think we've had guys calling off for hair appointments. We've had someone had a big tea on the Friday night and was still full on the Saturday. We had a laddie that was a prop. We had a laddie who went pony trekking with his grandma. This was a senior. That was a senior player as well, by the way. We're not talking youth rugby there. There was the prop that went to the opera. Call off, couldn't you go? He had tickets to the opera. We had the guy. Now this is in South.
All these. It seems to be all props. What's all this about?
I know. Well, I cannot vouch for. I think the haircut might be in a ballet. The haircut was obviously a back.
Obviously, yeah.
Yeah, we had the guy in. It was in South America. This was. We've got a couple of listeners in South America. The chairman of the club who couldn't make it to training because he'd been thrown out of his mother's house. The chairman of the club. So,
yeah. I still always go back to my favourite being the offshore guy, and the submarine. Those were my favourites. The guy who was the guy.
So there was we had one guy who got stuck on an oil rig because it got hit by a submarine, and then we had the other guy write in to say I couldn't play that weekend because I had to go and repair the oil rig in a diving bell.
Beautiful. What a small rugby world we live in.
So yes, get in touch. If you can go if you email podcast@scottishrugbyblog.co.uk or find us on Twitter @scottrugbyblog or @CammyBlack. Keep it anonymous if you want to. If you want to name and shame, we're more than happy to do that too. It's you breaching the general data protection regulations, not us. We're going to do that. On that note, we have got one of our regular features, and we've got a very quick one of these.
Well, we're loved high and we're loved low, we sing doggy bop on in speedos, but I just want to know, did you see the legend that's Doogie Donnelly?
Yes, it's Where's Doogie Donnelly. We haven't had one of these, or we haven't had many of these recently, but it's because everybody's indoors. Nobody's really going out, and you're socially distanced. I mean, you're 2 metres from somebody, you've no idea who they are. That's, you just kind of see. I think that's the standard thing. You're 2 metres from somebody.
Or you've no idea what's in their shopping bag.
Exactly. So maybe you've seen somebody, but you're just like, oh, I've seen them, but they're not doing anything interesting. rather than time someone saw Dougie Donnelly with his bag for life and could give us a detailed description of what the bag for life was like. That's the sort of detail we're after. Anyway, Andrew Young has got in touch via my Twitter DMs, and he says he's got a Dougie Donnelly for you lovely folks. He's currently doing training for the RAF, and for the past few weeks I've kept seeing someone who looked familiar, but I couldn't put my finger on why. I was scrolling through Twitter today and saw that Scotland international Sarah Bonner has posted a picture in RAF uniform saying she was about to commission as an officer in the RAF. Turns out I've been on a course behind her, living in the same mess this whole time. Huge congratulations to Sarah Bonner on that as well. So if you've seen anybody going out and about, then do let us know, and we'll do it on Where's Dougie Donnelly. We're going to move on. Let's do this now. Yes, it is Hands in the Ruck. It's our Any Other Business section of the podcast where we get to talk about life, the world in general, things outside of Scottish rugby. Rugby could be anything at all. I've got a couple that I need to dig out. John, I'll start with you. What's your Hands in the Ruck this week?
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to the Glasgow game, and very early on, it's the joy of the captain's challenge once again, isn't it? That's reared its ugly head. But in this instance, it wasn't the captain's challenge that was at fault. It was the TMO who couldn't actually find the right video. Spectacular failure from them. So we'll escalate how this actually plays out. But basically, Sam Johnson, off the first line out, which Fraser Brown's very clear when he's telling the referee what he wants to challenge, off the first phase of play from the line out, he gets hit by three Leinster players and then goes down. And he's down for a significant period of time. He then gets back to his feet and kind of waddles about. Doesn't look terribly comfortable on his feet, but he kind of, it's a massively long phase of play. Glasgow are then at the other side of the park. They play a pass to him. He chips it and gets smashed late. And eventually, play comes to a close. Fraser Brown challenges the first play. He says, off the first phase of the line out, Sam Johnson's been hit high, swinging arm. Can you check it? Very, very clear instructions. The TMO then proceeds to check the second one, where Sam Johnson has been hit late, but not high, and checks it over and over and over and over. And then they decide, actually, no, there's nothing at fault here, because there isn't, without checking the actual thing with captain's challenge. We then lose our captain's challenge for the rest of the game because it has failed. We didn't get foul play. Ridiculous situation. TMOs, I don't know what it is about TMOs in the Rainbow Cup, but they have just lost the plot. They have not... Bring back Ben Skeen. That's all I say.
Oh, careful, John. Whoa. Hang on.
He would have check, and check again. No, I mean, I think it's just, it's amateur o'clock.
Are they on Twitter, do you think? You think that's what the team was scrolling through Twitter? This game's mad, I can't even follow this.
I know, what a nonsense. I mean, if you're going to introduce something as controversial as the captain's challenge, then you need to have the bloody footage to back it up. It's just amateur o'clock, and I was really... Aside from the fact we've got an Irish referee refereeing an Irish team, which is just, I mean, that's pro 14, pro 16, pro 12 madness at its best anyway. But it just really, I've not seen that recently, and I was really surprised about it. And because of the captain's challenge, because it has an impact later on, where there's instances where, well, Adam Hastings gets his eyes raked. And everyone's going, well, why didn't Glasgow captain's challenge that? Because we lost our challenge. Yeah. Yeah. Because some idiot couldn't find video.
That was actually my Hands in the Ruck. And I know I've had this Hands in the Ruck before, and it kind of falls onto the Adam Hastings thing, is it's when the competition account tries to do banter. So the Pro 14
yes.
did this, tried a meme, and this is the problem when, you know, I mean, old people like me try memes and we don't really understand what we're doing. This is what happens. They'd essentially, they'd got, they'd photoshopped a Leinster kit onto the Hulk, and then they had Adam Hastings as Loki being beaten up. And you're like, look, I know somebody has spent a long time colouring that in, right, during the, rather than watching the game. But that's not a justification for putting out, because actually, yes, he was targeted, and that's fine. But the fact that there was footage circulating online showing a Leinster player, you know, attempting to gouge Adam Hastings' eye, then looks poor taste when the, you know, the official competition account is like going, ha ha ha, look, they've been, you know, it's, I get that they're trying to do content and I get all that, but I kind of think there's a, I don't think they need to be commenting on things in that way. That's not their job.
Well, when they share an office with Leinster management, I'm sure it's probably fine.
I was going to say that, you know, the Pro 14 who are based in Ireland, who all their TV side of things is Irish based, and you wouldn't, would you, do you really, honestly? No, it's, yeah, I agree with that.
With World Rugby, the four up from them.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah. I agree with that. But then it goes back to the whole thing of the Aussie and New Zealand they bring all the clips of the biggest hit this week and all this. And they're okay, fair enough. That's what people used to equate rugby to, and it's exciting, etc., to see these guys getting hit. It's we're trying to get rid of that just now. We're trying to get rid of. I'd like to see a big smash, but it's a legal one, you know, and they tend to correspond to the illegal smashes, and it's difficult. But going back to your point, John, about the captain's challenge, I think if they're going to keep something like that, I would probably prefer it to come from a coach rather than from a captain, because they've got the TV screens in front of them, and they can communicate it a little bit easier than someone who's breathing through their backside and has entered a few rucks and had their heads given to them a few times, you know.
Yeah,
well, that's absolutely it. There's that whole thing with there's the time limit on it as well. Like if play stops, you've got 20 seconds to captain's challenge because you don't want the water boys bringing on information. And we fell foul of that last week, or the week before last, sorry. And it's like, it seems like it's a half-baked idea that someone's went, do you know what, that sounds like a brilliant idea, let's do captain's challenges, because then they kind of complain if they, you know. And it's nonsense. It's just poorly managed, poorly controlled. And in this instance, actually, like, I've heard various captain's challenges where you're absolutely right. The captain's barely been able to articulate a sentence because he's playing a game of professional rugby. Whereas, in this instance, it was in the first couple of minutes. Fraser Brown was relatively okay. I mean, he was pretty direct and told him exactly what he was thinking. But he explained what he wanted really well. And yet they still couldn't find it. It's just,
I think that's the. I think you're right, Craig. It could so easily be coach communicating with the TMO. That's not hard. That, because that's the TMO does that anyway. The TMO is going to have to say check. Yeah. So all you need to do is to say the get a message to the TMO, which we're really saying, and then all the TMO needs to say is we've got to check. And in the meantime, while the play carries on, which is what happens with a TMO check anyway,
that's
enough time for the coach to relay the message to the TMO of what they want to check. So there'd be no different at all to a TMO normal check.
Or we could get the TV producers to do it, since that's part of their job just now as well, as the home TV producers, to draw attention to foul play for your sides. We often find, you know, it's funny how when you, particularly if you're playing in France, you often find that your incidents tend to crop up a wee bit more.
It was funny they couldn't find that other angle of Finn Russell's handoff on Bruce Doolan.
Didn't he
turn up until YouTube after the game, wasn't it? They got French. Oh, no, we don't have any cameras on that angle at all. No,
it's funny. Every amateur video photographer in Scotland was like, well, that's the angle there. We've got it. It was 2 seconds ago. No, we can't find it anymore. Deleted. That's it.
I'll come to yours in a minute, Craig. The one we had on, it came through Thomas Brownie's one as our Patreon, and then we've had another one, a similar one on the same lines. Thomas said, can we have a hands in the ruck about BT Sports, Healy and Kay's anti-Scottish jibes? And this is a few weeks ago. He said, tonight's Bevan Rod can be saved from being Scottish was pathetic. It's not funny anymore. And then Naxis on Twitter got in touch and said, the unbiased garbage from Luke Fitzgerald on the rugby pod, just kind of the anti-Scotland players apparently are not good, not the same level as Ireland, despite regularly beating England and France, which Ireland are struggling to do. Yet Ireland players seem better and for Lions purely because Ireland beat Scotland. And I think there is that, but I would say to both of those that Scotland have still not won the Six Nations Championship or the Triple Crown. Yeah, and I think until Scotland win one of those, I think at the very least the Triple Crown, which is doable, push for a championship maybe, I think that'll continue. I think the reason that Ireland, Wales and England don't get it is because they've all won it in the last 10 years, you know, at least once, a couple of times. But so I think until we start winning tournaments rather than games, I'm not saying they're right in what they're saying, but I don't think the attitude will change towards Scotland. Do you agree with that, Craig?
We were in the wilderness for quite some time, and I would reckon you're probably finding that people like Luke Fitzgerald and all these people that have just got used to thinking Scotland is like an Italy, and we're, you know, because we are used to thinking of Italy as Italy. And so I guess it's just almost like muscle memory. And I think the sooner we change that, and just as you say, we start to win things. Now, we are notorious for winning big games, we've moved on from, we've got used to beating England now, so now it's, we've got to win in France, and we've won in France now, so now it's got to be, we've got to beat Wales, we haven't beaten Wales. I think the next big one is Ireland now, and then if we can string them together, then I think. But I don't know. I just feel I'm getting more and more frustrated, and this is my hands in the ruck is the Lions garbage, constant. You know that our eight players are only on the Lions team sheet because Tooney's there. And I think, it's everything, including, for example, and I'm going to go down the route of backing up the Irish a little bit here. There's been all this going on constantly about Kyle Sinclair. Kyle Sinclair's gone to the Lions. Look at him. Look at his cheery wee face. Nobody's going, actually, there's Andrew Porter, who's been injured, playing a game that was a nothing game.
Mm.
He's been injured. He's out the Lions. Never mind the amount of money that he's going to lose, but also he's been given the stash, which is the most important part of all of this. he's built up, he's done all the photographs, he's going to be a Lion, and then all of a sudden it's cut short like that. And and nobody is saying, with all this, oh, good old Kyle Sinclair, we're really, like, don't get me wrong, Kyle Sinclair's a phenomenal player, and for what he did, and his interview on TV was fantastic for showing the passion in a player. But it's this whole, now it's, look, there's another English player getting on the Lions, look at him, he deserves to, he should have been there in the first place. What about Andrew Porter? You know, that guy's now just pretty much sitting at home devastated because he's never mind that he's not going in the Lions, but he's got an injury that could put him out. A toe injury is a significant injury for a prop. And it could be, look at George Horn, had a foot injury for a long time and he was out for a long period of time. So
I agree. It's getting really wearing now. I think there's a couple of, I think the Hamish Watson thing is going to rumble on. But look, I think the Scottish, seven of the eight Scotland players, and I think Doohan's my eighth that I'm not sure about. I think he needs to go and he needs to prove, he's got a point to prove to get to the test team. I think he'll do midweek, they'll throw him on and he's in that Tommy Seymour role, and he'll score tries for fun. I think he's got a lot to do to persuade them that he can get in the test team. I think the others are all there or thereabouts, believe it or not. Maybe Sutherland, I'm not sure about, but the rest, I think, are all in with a chance of being in that test team. We're not going to get all seven, but I think they're all there or thereabouts. And the constant, well, Finn Russell's no, Gatland, this idea of Gatland when you pick them, it's all down to Gatland. It's not Warren Gatland, every single tour that he's been on, and you watch the DVDs, you watch the videos at back, relies on his coaches to, you know, Gregor Townsend's the attack coach. Right, Warren Gatland's not the attack coach. Gregor Townsend is. Steve Tansey's the defence coach. Warren Gatland's not defence. He oversees it all, and he'll take advice from you, speak to them. But they're working as a coaching team, right? It's not all Warren Gatland doesn't pick the squad. The coaching team picks the squad. The coaching team picks the match day squad. So, you know, we've said on the podcast, John, that, you know, Dan Biggar, you know, we've had him as our starting 10 predicted, and I think probably there still is a bit like that. But Finn Russell's going to give him a hell of a run for his money. Yep. And, you know, Finn Russell has the potential to be an absolute phenomenal lion on this tour. And same with Ali Price. I actually think that Ali Price is probably the best scrum half selected on this tour. I think Hamish Watson will start. I think Ali Price will start. I think Finn Russell probably will be on the bench. I think Xander will make the test squad. Because of the work he gets around the park,
it depends. I think there's two things. I think Gatland and Lyons. Gatland over time has always let the warm ups speak. So, you know, the people, he's given everyone a game to see how they're going to manage. So, if, you know, a lot of people say that Finn Russell, he's either a switch on or a switch off player. Well, he's going to have his chance. If he's going to be the man, he needs to be the man in the warm up games, and he needs to grab that position. What I would say is, I think that Rory Sutherland has jumped up and got more chance now because Porter covered both sides. My problem is that Sinclair could unseat Xander. And there's a very, very good chance of that, depending on how Xander plays this one. And whether he comes out all guns blazing and goes off being a bit reckless and this, that, and the other, then you might find him being dropped or not getting the chance. But if he comes out and does what Sinclair does on a regular basis, and that is produce a phenomenal game, and he's wound his neck in a little bit, Kyle Sinclair. So I think if he does that, I think he's got a good opportunity. But I think it's going slightly the different way. I think Suz has got more chance than Xander.
Yeah, that's interesting. I think the Finn Russell thing's interesting, John. We've talked about this before. Is I don't think Finn Russell can win with fans. I think it's different with coaches because they see things different things. Because this idea that Finn Russell switches on or off, I think people will say he's had a quiet day, a game, because he doesn't do any of the mad crap. That's not necessarily a bad thing. It just means I think he's better now, and we've seen that he's better now at playing a nice, calm game from 10. And not always doing the mad crap.
But he can still do the mad crap.
He can, yeah.
That's the thing. And it's defences know. It's the thing with Finn Russell, and we've talked about this so much in the podcast. Like, professional rugby defences are coached to, you know, they spend a lot of time analysing what's in front of them. And see if Finn Russell's in front of you. Half the time, he's not sure what he's doing. So how are you meant to figure out what he's doing? I'm being very flippant there, but he does the unexpected. And he has enough control and enough game management about him. Yes, I'm going to use that term to understand better than he used to when the madcap is possible. You know, no longer are we seeing the chip and chase out his own 5 meter line, like straight in an Italian winger's hands, like you done in Glasgow. I remember one horrible night in Scotstoun where it was the worst chip and chase you've ever seen. And it was like, it was under the posts before MD had even realised. And it was just like, Finn, what are you doing? But he does that a lot less. Now it's more about he uses his skill set. Yeah. He uses his kicking game very well. He uses that pass. Just, oh,
I think the interesting... Go on, Craig. No, you go.
You also have to look at... There's been a lot said about Farrell will not play outside Finn Russell because he's not that kind of player. Well, what you also have to look at is that Farrell isn't Tooney's kind of player. And so how do you beat a defence that are made up of massive South Africans? What you do is you have to use someone who's going to be putting the ball over the back of them, who's going to link up with these 12. Now, you know, if I'm not a big fan of Fazzies, as everyone, a lot of Scots aren't, but, you know, he's driven and he's driven to win. But if he can't, he won't, I don't know how he's going to get on with Tooney, because it's going to be an interesting one, because he likes a game plan. He likes to keep it in the narrow confines and doesn't know how to adapt. Whereas Tooney's always very much...
There's two things.
If you can.
Yeah, and I think that's the intro. There was an article today in the Telegraph where they'd interviewed players that Farrell had played against in the Championship. And one of there was two things. One is that he constantly berates his own teammates. Mm. And I don't think that... Finn's not going to take that. I mean, you know, and I think I think that's maybe caused some issues between him and Hogg in the past. But I think they've both got better understanding. But that's taken years to develop that. Do you know what I mean? And also that Farrell wants to win every single battle on the pitch. And I think you're up against the South Africans. You're going to have the Lions are going to have to accept they're not going to win every battle on the pitch. They're not going to win everything. They're going to lose. They're going to be on the back foot a lot of the time. But that, if you've got the right game plan, that doesn't matter. If what you're then doing is what Scotland did in the Six Nations, essentially, which is, you know, hang Hogg on one wing and Finn Russell on the other wing in the backfield, collect high kicks, and then just bang them, you know, 80 metres down the pitch in the corner and keep them pinned back and play a territory game, then it doesn't matter if you're getting smashed in every tackle. And I'm not sure that Owen Farrell has the mentality to deal with that, whereas other players might, like, you know, we see like someone like Chris Harris, you know, looks comfortable playing under that pressure where, you know, every collision is you're going backwards, but you know, you trust in the system that the kicking game is going to keep the team going forward somehow. So that's, I don't know. I agree with you. I actually don't see Farrell making that. I can see him there as a break, you know, in emergency break glass.
But what we're discounting here, and I can't believe I'm going to be this guy, because I absolutely despise Owen Farrell with every inch of my being. But we're discounting the idea that players can't adapt and don't adapt in different situations. And Owen Farrell's never worked for Gregor Townsend. So whilst all the evidence points to he is not a Townsend player at this point, who knows? Owen Farrell might surprise us and be the new Pete Horn. Who knows?
And you do have Daddy joining them on tour as well now.
Just for the test though. So maybe they're already suggesting that Owen will be up in the stand and they'll have Daddy Faz there with them, and you know, it'll be like it's like a wee family out.
Do you know that? Do you remember this is a massive throwback and a niche reference? You know the film Road Trip from the early 2000s.
Yeah,
right. And they've got there's the really geeky character. And they basically spend the entire film corrupting him and exposing him to all these new experiences. And when his dad turns up at the end, he stands up to him. That's going to be Owen Farrell. Basically, Gregor Townsend and Finn Russell corrupting him for the whole tour. And Andy Farrell turns up expecting a straight-laced Sonny. All right, Sonny's going, Dad, why? Yeah. Everything's great.
I can kick the ball over top.
Look, I can pass out the back, Dad. I can pass out the back. You know, none of that fancy crap, lad. What are they doing here?
Ball with a loaf of bread.
Right, so what we're saying then is this Lions tour is going to be the Owen Farrell Rebellion Tour.
The coming of age of Owen Farrell.
Yeah. Oh, beautiful, beautiful. Beautiful.
Final comment, someone said the Lions need a dependable kicker on the park like Jenks in 1997. Does that mean it has to be bigger at 10 or Faz at 12? Farrell is not that reliable a kicker.
No, he's not.
Finn was kicking at the weekend. It was kicking fine.
Yeah,
he's a decent goal kicker.
He's all right. He's an 80+% percenter. Yeah. I'm not sure there's many 90%+, unless, you know, we've got no Chris Patterson's and Greg Laidlaw's.
Oh, I mean, Ross Thompson's up in the 90s just now, just saying.
Hoggy's not a bad kicker either, though. You know, so Hoggy's got a boot on him as well, you know, so you never know.
Yeah. He also won crossbar challenge against Glasgow for Exeter a few years ago. So,
Hog at Lions 10 for the last test, you heard it here first. Yeah. So that's been it for this week then, Craig. We did your hands in there, didn't we?
Yes, the Lions.
We covered everything else, so lovely stuff. We'll be back next week. We'll work out what we're going to talk about because it's near rugby, but maybe we'll do a wee season review next
week.
That's not a plan. What we're building up to, of course, is that I need to get my right date on this. So it's Friday. It's the Friday before the Lions match. I'm going to get the right date for this because I keep getting it wrong. So on Friday, the 25th of May at 8:30 p.m. live on our Facebook, YouTube, Twitch and Twitter pages, we have Dodmaster, which it's our British and Irish Lions themed version of Taskmaster. We have a collection of fans, podcasters and analysts taking part representing all the different nations. So we've got Lee from the Blood and Mud podcast representing England. We've got Graf Prosser from the Rock and Roll podcast doing Wales. Sam Lana, whose granddad apparently knows an Irishman. He's doing Ireland. Couldn't find an Irish person to do it. We've got Johnny McGinty from Howard Fife doing Scotland.
Go on, Johnny.
And we have Squidge from Springboks. Now, if you go to our Just Giving page, which is justgiving.com/fundraiser/Dodmaster, or if you go to Just Giving and search Dodmaster, then you can find our Just Giving page and you can donate there. The event itself is free. All we're asking for is a donation to My Name is Doddy. If you are associated with a club, what we're also asking you to do is to buy a pint at any virtual bar or donate the cost of a night out to your local club as well. If you're a local club and you're listening and you want to put this on your big screen the night before the Lions and have an event, you're more than welcome to do that as well. Let us know. We'll give you a shout out on the night. So,
can you clarify the date, Cammy? Because
it is Friday.
I fear you may have said it wrong.
Friday the 25th of June. Did I say May?
I think you may have.
Friday the 25th of June. I may have said May. Friday the 25th of June at 8:30 p.m. We've got some British and Irish Lions reading out some tasks as well. So we will announce those close to the date. So if you go to the Just Giving page, you can donate there and that's lovely. If you go to contestants, each individual contestant is raising money themselves because one of the tasks is to raise the most money. And at the minute, Johnny McGinty for Scotland is in the lead. But he can only stay there with your help. So get involved.
There's already been a significant amount of money raised.
We have raised so far £563.
Yeah, thank you to everyone so far who's donated.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, that's absolutely phenomenal. But it's kind of, you know, we didn't know how much we'd be able to raise for this, so we're delighted. If we can top 1,000, then we'll be doing well. So I think that's achievable if we keep pushing it. So please tell your friends, tell your family, share it wide and share it far.
If we get to 1,000, I will definitely salute you all on my cheer and do my O Captain.
Yeah.
Well, I thought you were going to say if we get to 1,000, I'll definitely donate to Johnny McGinty, but that's a different story.
Yes. Now, as a judge, I have to be, of course, impartial, Craig.
John can donate to the main. John's allowed to donate to the main. John is one of our Dodmasters. So we have unlike Taskmaster, we don't have just one. We've got three Dodmasters. John is going to be one of our Dodmasters on the evening, scoring and judging.
Just to check, do I get a TMO as well?
No.
Can I get a TMO?
I will be your TMO. Yes. I'll point out any infractions on the night.
I want regular check.
I've seen a couple of the attempts at the tasks already, and you're all in for a treat. Let me just say that. So, including a complaint from someone's partner saying, "Please make it stop." So on that note, we're going to make this podcast up now. Thank you very much to John and Craig. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us live. Like I said, we'll be back next Wednesday, 8:30 p.m, and it'll be available for download afterwards. But for the moment, it's goodbye from me and goodbye from John and Craig.
Bye, folks.
Thank you.